This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 256 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com, and joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne, just Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
You know, I'm excellent. Thank you very much.
Good to hear. Good to hear. No pithy comments this week.
No, I left my pithy in the when I was out cave hunting the other day. I left my pithy helmet behind.
Excellent. Excellent. How's your week been?
Because I'm a bit pithed off. Oh, but who'd say anything as corny as that? I must be a father with dad jokes like this, I don't. My week has been about 7 days.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yours?
About the same.
Hey. Yeah. I've got to ask, after our big discussions last week, yep. And, you know, you put the big call out for your road rally rage,
yes.
Road rage thing that you're shooting. Yeah. What are you doing here? How'd you go? Did you get someone on board?
I did. Adam Davidson has come on board. He's
Sorry, dude. Sorry to hear that. I thought you'd have got some good responses.
I did have one other person put their hand up, but I'd already spoken with Adam. Richard Clark also put his hand up and
did he? Tell you what, me and Richard, if you're listening, we'll go up there together, mate. You and me, and we'll go up there and because Richard's a longtime friend of mine,
right?
And we'll come up when I come up to help you out the night.
Adam, I don't know what that means for you, mate.
Adam, yeah, not a long-time friend at all. I said I was going to come up for a night.
Yeah.
Or come up for an afternoon or something.
Yeah.
Me and Richard will come up together.
Okay.
So, if it's okay with you, Richard, yeah. I'm kind of informally asking you on a date. They haven't seen you in like 9 years, but, you know, you're one of my closest friends.
Cool. Yeah. So it's all good. And, I've had further discussions this week with the marketing manager at Kidney Health Australia, and got all the sort of nuts and bolts are in place now. So
it's for Kidney Health Australia, is it?
Yeah.
Tell me, wouldn't bouncing around the car over rough roads bad for the kidneys? I mean,
potentially.
Can't be stupid, but isn't that like what the trawling for customers? What are they? It's just like, if we put this on, we'll get a bunch of people who need help. We'll make some money.
No? Yeah, good point.
You know what it's like? You're sitting in a car for days, bouncing. You blow it. Your kidneys, it's going to be pretty reasonably uncomfortable. You'd have to see there's a certain degree of irony in that.
Yeah.
You'd have to say.
Exactly. I'd not thought of that.
Ask them. No, I don't want to jeopardize the contract. No. I'll ask them.
I'll ask him after the event's over.
as soon as you've cashed the check.
That's it.
I had a weird thing happen to me just a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Not really weird, but, you know, it's one of those funny little frustrating things that happen to you as a person in life. Yeah, I was going down to visit my old mate Dave Oakley yesterday for a talk on we're building a new website and all sorts of stuff, and
right.
Go down there. And so I thought, well, yeah, I don't get a chance very often to shoot sunrises because having kids and stuff in school. But I'll get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'll head out and I'll shoot some sunrise.
Right.
On the way down today, because he's a good couple of hour drive from my place in peak hour. So I thought I'd beat the peak hour traffic, get some shots on the way, and I'll be able to use them somewhere.
Now, did you think to look at the Bureau of Meteorology webpage before you decided on this?
Well, it was going to be stormy. The storms developing was the
right.
Which is a chance for some decent cloudage.
Yeah.
You would have thunk.
Yeah.
So I set the alarm for 5 in the a.m. That's highly, because I found setting 5 in the p.m. for sunrise is not so good. depending on where you live, of course. So I set this for 5 o'clock, and then I said, well, I better get my gear together. So I've gone hunting around, and, of course, I don't shoot landscape stuff almost never, so I don't have a lot of stuff to hand where I would normally keep it. But I went looking for my variable neutral density filter.
Right.
And I searched high, and I tore the bleeding house apart. I went through every pocket of every bag. I looked everywhere for this thing. And I knew I'd seen them recently, and I know I've got a couple of my filters at my studio because I use them when I'm doing my understanding camera workshop. I talk about reducing light in the camera. So it must be there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, So after an hour of fruitless searching around, I sort of gave up, went to bed. 5 o'clock came, woke up, looked out the window. Not a cloud to be seen, not a skerrick, not even a whisper of cloud. But I did get the old Tamron 150 to 600 out.
Yeah.
Look through the window at Saturn, which was pretty cool.
Okay.
You could make the rings out of Saturn.
Wow.
So anyway, I went back to bed, as you would, for another couple of hours. Drove down Dave Oakley's place.
Mm.
On the way back, I saw these old, this is like 2:30 in the afternoon, there's this old sort of run-down boat sitting in some long grass on the side of the road near one of the main freeways down here.
Okay.
So I'll just jump out and take a couple of photos of those. So I've jumped in there, put my hand in my bag. Guess what I put my hand on?
You're very straight on to
the first thing I touched. Now, I hadn't found, I searched every bleeding pocket of this bag.
Yeah.
First thing I look at, I was looking for my polarizer, put my hand in, bang, there it is. Yeah, unbelievable. So that was, and I was having this discussion today at school pickup time. We were talking about, car keys or something. So I said, oh, why is it always in the last place you look? And my comment, of course, is, well, why would you keep looking once you're
found? Exactly. That's right.
Yeah. What can you say? And I had another thought during the week.
Yeah.
When we talked last week about the Iditarod, when there was no snow.
Yeah.
I came up with a name for it.
Yeah.
The Dry Iditarod.
Nice.
The Dry Iditarod. So if any year they have a bad weather, it's no longer the Iditarod, it's the Dry Iditarod.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I'm going to put it up there. I'm going to copyright it first, patent it, get the website.
Yeah, register the website.
Get the domain name and see if we can't make a couple of bucks.
Excellent. So
do you have any fascinating things for us to be gawking at and listening to this week?
Well, I took a photo over the weekend.
You did too. I saw that on Facebook, I think.
Yeah.
Did I?
Yeah.
Did I comment on it?
Yeah. I don't think you commented on it.
What was the photo of?
Of an old shipwreck. In Homebush Bay in Sydney.
That's right. And someone asked, is that an old photo or a new photo? Somebody asked for memory, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. And it was shot on Saturday afternoon. Yeah.
It's a panorama if my brain...
Well, so, it's just a crop.
Oh, lazy man.
Yeah. So, well, it was a case of when you looked at the full frame, all that crap in the top third and all the crap in the bottom third was irrelevant. It didn't need to be there.
Was that an African irrelevant or an Indian irrelevant?
That's right.
So one with the big ears. So why didn't you, looking at it when you composed it, why didn't you then say, well, I'm going to make this panorama and shoot it as a panorama?
Because at the time that I was shooting it, as you could see, it was just on dusk.
Well, it didn't look that hard, dude.
The what?
You said, as you can see, I said, well, I didn't look that hard.
Right. And I was having to fire the flash manually as often as it would recharge within the 30 seconds that I was exposing the frame for.
There's a flash in that shot, is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
See? Did it well.
Doing what?
Did it well.
Lighting the wreck, I'm assuming.
Lighting the side of the wreck, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, the sky was still quite light, and if I had not filled any flash, I either would have blown out the sky or ended up with a dark silhouette of the ship.
So you shot for the horizon for the landscape and.
Well, yeah, I exposed so that the sky would be maybe a stop under because it was dusk, so I didn't want it to be, right in the guts of the histogram, and then used some flash just to bring out some detail on the ship.
Yeah, look, you did well. Yeah, and you've kept the color. Did you gel that flash at all, or was that...
No, that was just naked flash.
Cool. So because it's quite a warm look. Obviously, the wreck is obviously rusty, so that kind of helps your lighting, but it's good warm light.
I shot it on a daylight, a white balance.
Yeah.
But then I think when I post-processed it, I pulled the sliders a little bit away from there and made it just a touch warmer.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty close to what I shot.
Nice.
Hmm.
So yeah, had you leave pass to go out and shoot?
Well, it's a funny thing because I had heard of that shipwreck.
You never shot it before?
No, and I couldn't have told you the name of the ship prior to last Saturday. I just knew that there was this wreck in Sydney Harbour somewhere, and it had these trees growing out of the middle of it, and blah blah blah. And we were going down to Sydney because Kath's mum and her partner, who live out in the sticks or up the coast, they had come to Sydney for a week and had rented an apartment for a week, and they invited us down for a barbecue dinner. And so I just threw the camera in the car just in case, you know, we wanted some family photos or whatever. And
the tripod and
And I've walked in the place. And it was on Homebush Bay, and I've walked in the place, and I've looked straight out the, like, off the back veranda over Homebush Bay, and there's the wreck of the SS Airfield, like, 100 metres from their back door. And I've just gone, oh, my God, that is that shipwreck, you know? And
who are these rich people you're hobnobbing with who's got a view like that?
No, this is what I'm saying. It's mother-in-law and her partner. They just rented this apartment for a week. Just to have a holiday in Sydney, and it just so happened.
Listening to you, I was doing the socks again.
Right, so it just so happened that it was right there.
How cool is that?
Yeah, so I was just stoked, and of course we got there at, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon when it was still bright daylight, and I was like, oh, I cannot wait for the sun to go down because this is just going to look amazing. So did it. You really didn't look at the photo, did you? So as the sun got down, I got out there and took a few frames.
Nice. So that's called preparation for you.
it's just having the camera with you. That's the thing.
Yeah, there's something I saw the other day, and I blowed up. I remember what it is now, but it's like, where is my camera? Yeah, it was either a face or something that I saw that just. Yeah, I kicked myself for not having a camera with me here.
Right.
I can't remember what it is because it happens quite a lot, obviously, because there's lots of things I want to take photos of.
So was it something that your iPhone just wasn't going to cut it?
Well, probably not, yeah. Probably more. It was probably an angle of view thing.
Right.
More than likely, I'll shut it with my iPhone. And I'll just go with my iPhone photos there just to see. But I have been using my iPhone quite a bit this week, actually. I've got some lovely shots of the old Brighton bathhouses.
Oh, yeah. Yep. The little wooden sheds down on the beach.
Had a bit of fun with those. And kids' birthday parties. Shot a 3-year-old's birthday party with the iPhone.
Right.
As you do. And I wasn't there in any official capacity.
Right.
I did a great portrait shoot with the kids. I've been shitting with the iPhone a bit this week.
Yeah, right.
But I also shot the kid. I shot my eldest daughter tonight again, another 5-minute photo shoot. By the side window, just for a bit of fun. I felt the urge to take a photo, so I slapped her up against the wall.
Does she ever get sick of it?
Well, you know, she doesn't have a choice. It's like, yeah, there, I don't feed you.
Fair enough.
You want to wear clothes when you go out the house? You want to have shoes? Do you want to eat? Do you want to ever see a friend? Do you ever want any pocket money ever again? You know, just a normal, typical parent encouragement, yeah, to get someone to pose for you.
Right.
And she's pretty good. Both girls are good. I mean, I knew my two, but now she's 3 in a couple of weeks, my 2-year-old. But when she was about 2, like just started being a 2, whenever she'd see a camera, she'd grab a chair and start pushing towards the window where the light was good. And there's always a sign that, yeah, she's not going to mind for too much.
Nice.
So you took a photo this week. What other fascinating things have you got to regale us with tonight?
A couple of things that I came across in my plethora of news feeds that I watch on photography related subjects. I don't think it was a Shutters Inc. listener who would have bought this, but in case you hadn't seen it, the Hasselblad that was used to shoot the moon landing for Apollo 15, I think it was, has just sold for $758,000 and change.
Man. You know, now here's the thing.
Yeah.
There's 2 of those in Australia.
Right.
Apollo Hasselblads.
Oh.
And a friend of mine owns both of them.
Wow.
And she's got them in the basement of her store.
Wow.
In country New South Wales.
Wow.
In a box somewhere. She's got no idea where they are.
What?
That's how much they've been there since 1960s.
Wow.
And they belong to her dad.
So how many Hasselblads went up
on
the... over the journey of missions, I know it's probably a couple of two or three, probably each one. Who knows?
Yeah, right.
She's got two Apollo Hasselblads.
Wow.
You know, we're having dinner one night, and she just happened to casually we're talking about something, and she goes, "Oh, it's like my Apollo Hasselblads." I go, "What do you mean, your Apollo? Was it a special edition?" She goes, "No, they're the ones they used."
Wow.
Her dad got them at some auction in the 70s or something. Where wow. Who knows how much he got them for? You know.
Wow.
So quite astounding. So I offered $100 for one of them.
And she didn't take it?
And she could have picked, she could have given me the bad one. she could have kept the good one, but no. Yeah. Now she's seen this, she'll probably want even more for it than $100. But yes, it's amazing what you can find just sort of laying around. Now, I don't know what the Michaels Museum in town here, but I'm pretty sure they've got one of the NASA Hasselblads as well. I'm not sure what generation of NASA Hasselblad or but I'm pretty sure they've got some of those sort of stuff in their museum down here too.
Right.
So amazing, but 700,000 that's pretty yep. decent, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a Japanese businessman who bought it.
Wow. He probably did it for the publicity.
Probably, because it says here he is the founder of a Japanese retail chain called Yodobashi Camera.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, that's how much publicity. So, yeah. A similar thing happened after when John F. Kennedy's personal belongings were auctioned off at Sotheby's.
Right.
In New York. I mean, not that long ago. It was only like 20 years ago.
Okay.
And because I know it was only 20-odd years ago, so 30 years ago, so Arnold Schwarzenegger was one of the people bidding because he was never related at the time.
Right.
And this guy bought John F. Kennedy's cigar humidor.
Oh, okay.
For something like $700,000.
Wow.
Like, you know, 400 times more than what they thought it was going to sell for.
Yeah, right.
And the whole point was because he owned Cigar Aficionado magazine.
Right.
So he did it for the publicity.
Yep.
Okay. So he went and spent all his money for the publicity.
Yep.
And it was reported by many places, because they didn't quite hear who bought it, that the owner of Cigar and Fishing magazine... Which you just have to chuckle over, don't you? You
ouch.
Just have to say that's just too that just serves yourself right, frankly. Way, way too funny.
Yeah.
So well that's good. What else have you got?
The other thing that I saw, I only came up with a couple of things this week. The other one that I saw was another post. This was also on DIYphotography.net. Faster and better, the best Photoshop keyboard shortcuts. Now what I liked about this is that they've created a JPEG of a keyboard,
yeah,
you know, for your computer, with all
clean,
the keys.
I had to clean the crumbs off it before they put the photo on.
No, it's not a photo, it's a graphic.
Oh, it's a JPEG.
So I think the idea is that you can print this out and then cut it all up and then stick the keys on the keys of your keyboard. And so that way you've got all of the keyboard shortcut strokes for Photoshop actually on the keys of your keyboard in front of you. So if you haven't remembered that, you know, W is the magic wand tool,
is it?
It'll be written it really? On the, it'll be written on your W key every
but
time.
But what if you want to type a letter later? Going, well, I don't know what to do now. I don't know my QWERTY for my...
Yeah, no, they have the letters written on there as well.
But they used to have overlays for that sort of stuff, but of course, yeah. It would require a different size overlay for everybody's
size keyboard.
So yeah. This makes more sense, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and in the audio world, there's a mob called Editor's Keys.
Yeah,
and they do keyboard shortcut sets for different digital audio workstations. So if you're running Pro Tools, you can buy the Pro Tools set, and they're adhesive stickers, and you stick each one onto the different keys, and it not only tells you the letter or number of the key, it tells you what that shortcut key does within Pro Tools. And if you're running some other, you know, editing system, you buy the editor's keys for that system, and you stick them on your keyboard. And yeah, we have them at work.
Does it show you an example of the Photoshop one at all?
Yeah, there's a JPEG on the site.
Is it free to download, is it?
Yeah.
I just want to download the one that tells me which key is the unsuck key.
Yeah,
I don't want to stick all those things in my keys. I just want to have just the one.
Yeah.
Which one do I want? Is that like function shift or something?
I don't think there's a shortcut for that one yet.
Or do you, do you have to actually type the whole word unsuck? Because that would just be... I mean, surely there's a shortcut to typing unsuck.
You would think. But they've also got it as a PDF, so if you just wanted to have a PDF version...
Yeah, you can, that wouldn't stick on your keyboard anywhere near as well, though, would it?
No, it would not.
Maybe you stick that one on your screen. It might make your photos look better. I can't see my photos. See, problem solved already. Mm. Look at that. Fantastic.
And the author of this post on DIYphotography.net says one of his all-time favorites is when you bring up a dialogue box in Photoshop for, you know, levels or curves or something like that, and you start tweaking the parameters, and then you realize after a while of tweaking all those parameters that you've pretty much buggered it all up. Rather than hitting the cancel button, hold down your alt key and you will see that the cancel button magically transforms itself into a reset button. So you can just go alt cancel, and that will actually reset whatever the dialog box is that you're in back to its factory default setting. So it will completely clear any, you know, level adjustment or curve adjustment that you've dialed in. So you can start buggering it up all over again.
You can start that process all over. That's pretty cool too.
Yeah, that's a handy one to know. So they were the two things that I had.
Wow. I've got a couple of questions for you.
Right.
Okay. The Exxon Valdez.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which spilled a heap of oil in...
Where?
Up in the Alaska somewhere.
Yeah, Alaska somewhere, yeah. Who cleaned it up?
And it would have been the late 80s. Who cleaned it up? Probably nobody.
How many animals were killed?
Zillions.
So we had these kind of vague details about it.
Yeah.
What photos do you remember?
Ones of aquatic birds covered in thick, gooey oil.
Yeah. So it was 25 years ago this week. Right. Exxon Valdez. And I was thinking...
That would make it 89 then, yeah.
Yeah, and I couldn't really... And I saw this headline come out. I said, I can't really remember the details so well, but, gee, I remember the images.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, there's these rock-strewn beaches just full of oil, and people just covered in trying to clean these birds and covered in oil. And it just reminded me, the power of imagery.
Yeah.
That, whilst the details start to disappear, those images were so graphic and so powerful that they resonate and stick with us, you know. And I would reckon an environmental disaster in the last 25 years, our thought memory would straight away, as soon as we hear about it, we'd visualize those sort of pictures.
Yeah.
From the Exxon Valdez spill. It's just the power of images and how they help us keep memories of things and give us cultural references and all that sort of stuff, that without the images in that story, we would have this vague recollection only. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, right.
Not the spill, just the association of how those images worked, which I thought was pretty cool. Now, I was blown away. I was driving home from Dave Oakley's place yesterday, and I like to listen to talkback radio.
Okay.
And not like the cheesy, like ABC, like Australian Broadcasting Corporation or whatever they call themselves. They're really dull talkback radio shows. And there was this guy on talking about this new technology that's being used to help blind people see.
Okay.
And once again, we keep coming back to the same theme about how is digital photography changing the world, or how's photography been changed by digital. And this was a great technology. So what these people have done, they've come out with an app, of course, that you can take a photo with your iPhone, of a scene, or an Android, if you had to, of, say, a room you want to go into, and it would process the image into sound waves of and you'd be trained to listen to these sound waves. It would tell you where obstacles are, how tall things are, where the light is, where the windows are, where people are in the room. And and they've been testing this on people who've been blind since birth, so they have no cognizant past memory to remind us of what places look like.
Right.
And these people, after only 70 hours of training, can now recognize a person sitting in a chair when they walk into a room.
Wow.
with the power of this they call it the iPhone, EYE.
Yeah, nice.
Of course, yeah, good.
Nice.
But the actual system is called Voice, V-O-I-C, in caps,
yep.
The O-I-C, V-O-I-C-E system. And it's really quite remarkable. It's turning images into what's called soundscapes.
Yeah, right.
It's incredibly cool. So I just thought that was blowing me away, that how imagery is helping change the world. Yeah,
I love this. For example, a diagonal line such as a staircase is converted to a string of rising musical notes.
Ding 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 ding.
That's so cool. Yeah.
And stuff like a rising bright line of something is a rising tone.
Yep.
But a bright spot is a beep.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and a brightly filled rectangle like a window becomes a noise burst.
Wow.
And a vertical grid such as trellises or whatever is converted into a rhythm.
Wow.
You know, it's just astounding. And you get trained to recognize these patterns, these sound patterns.
That is awesome.
As you look around the room, and you can pick up everything.
Wow.
And I loved that. I thought it was pretty damn.
That is phenomenal technology.
Just remarkable. And once again, this is an app for your iPhone and relatively short period, a couple of weeks of training, and you're on your way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I've just thought of this just this very second. In the non-hearing community, I'm trying to see how I say that in a polite way, non-hearing community, people who go, there's a stigma attached to people who go get hearing aids to be able to hear.
Yeah.
I've heard of a lot of people who are totally non-hearing really getting quite upset at these people, you know, for leaving their world or feeling the need to have to go hear. And I've heard of quite a bit of angst and stuff like that about this hearing, non-hearing people. I'm just wondering if a similar thing would happen with the blind community.
I don't know.
Because I never would have assumed anyone who is non-hearing would have an issue with people wanting to hear.
No.
From my perspective, but I've heard that's a common, not a common, but it's not infrequent, let's put it that way, occurrence. With people who go get bionic ears and stuff put in, they can face a lot of backlash from the community.
That's bizarre.
Yeah. So we can't judge because we have no idea the experiences, but it's a known thing that happens.
Yeah, I just don't understand the attitudes of people who have the benefit of hearing getting all bent out of shape because someone who can't hear wants to hear.
Yeah, I know.
What's with that?
No, the people who have no hearing. So the people who are deaf object to other people who are deaf getting bionic implants and wanting to hear. They want to keep them deaf.
What?
Yeah.
What's the advantage to that?
Once again, not having a reference of having that experience, I can't say, but there is, I know.
I'm wondering, is it that there are differing levels of, deafness?
Oh,
maybe the people who are, hearing impaired who are the ones getting bent out of shape over the other ones, maybe they're in a position where they can't get any kind of technological assistance because their deafness is too extreme.
They absolutely can, and they refuse.
Oh.
Yeah, it's interesting. So it's not the forum for this, of course, and see how delicately we're trying to be politically correct around phraseology. But I'm just wondering, just literally hit my head just then as a from remembering this from times in the past, I wonder if the blind community, is there going to be that kind of thing happen as well? Who knows? Then I saw a cool article as well this week on the guy who shot the photograph for the Windows XP background.
Yeah,
green rolling hills and blue sky.
Yeah.
He's in Australia at the moment for Microsoft.
Oh, is he?
Going around trying to tell everyone that Microsoft XP, which is where his image was famous from, is about to be shut off permanently, effectively.
Right, yes.
You better upgrade. But he's been talking about the licensing of that photograph and how he'd wish he'd be able to, not knowing how popular it was going to become. Yeah, he got a very basic flat rate for this image,
right,
and how much he would love to. They're saying if he could have worked out somewhere in the region of just a fraction of a cent per image, per installation, he would have, you know, $5 or $10 million.
Yeah.
You know, because apparently it's about 1 billion people have used XP.
Yeah.
So that was interesting about when we talk, people talk to me all the time about licensing of images and yeah, what should they charge or how should they license stuff? And well, there's a guy with a lot of experience to be worthwhile listening to, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. Now, for those who like watching behind the scenes videos of how stuff's done.
Yeah.
Dave Oakley, so once again, yesterday whilst we were pretending to be doing other work, we were actually just looking at these videos.
Yeah.
He put me onto this website called The Slanted Lens.
Yeah.
And this guy just does like this really cool sort of World War II style images.
Okay.
Yeah, like a guy going off to war kissing his girl goodbye at the train station.
But okay.
He recreates he gets the train, he gets the smoke machines, the multiple lights and everything else and sets and people in costume and all this sort of stuff and does these remarkable setups. And so if you love watching a great behind the scenes video and getting some tips and thoughts about lighting and vision,
yeah,
some of the stuff on that website is terrific.
And cool.
Definitely worth a gander.
Right.
So I enjoyed the couple of those that I saw.
Yeah.
And then I sat this afternoon when I was also working and watched this video from the Gulf Photo Plus show that was on recently, which is a big overseas, you know, sort of photographers convention.
Wow.
And what they do with these videos is they get two photographers pretty much having a shootout on stage live, and on the stage is props and lighting and backdrops and blah, 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 blah. And they get these two well-known photographers up on stage and announce to them what they have to shoot. Okay, so give them the theme of a shoot that they have to do or style.
Yep.
And they have 20 minutes to come up with a concept, to set it up, to light it, to shoot it, to download it, to edit it, and display it.
Wow.
Yeah, live.
Not much pressure.
In front of hundreds and hundreds of people watching. Yeah, exactly. And then people vote for which one they thought did a better job.
Right. I have a feeling that Greg Heisler, Joe McNally, and friends are all part of this, aren't they?
They are. They're all part of the same sort of
thing. And Zacharias. Yeah.
Well, Zacharias is one of the ones I was watching.
Right.
So that's but that was great. That was great watching.
Yeah.
Nothing like watching a couple of ducks on stage, you know. You know, ducks, you know, smooth on top, paddling like crazy underneath.
Oh,
that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
Just going crazy, just trying to, but yeah, trying to conceptualize an image.
Yep.
Then figure out how to light it and figure out how to do everything, you know, in that very short time frame. And then, yeah, a lot of what I'm going to shoot this, I'm going to add these elements in post-processing to build on the image. And so it's not a classically shot image. I want to set the whole scene and shoot the scene and just tweak the post. They're actually doing quite a bit of post stuff, which is neither right nor wrong, but not always my cup of tea. I don't mind doing it sometimes.
Yeah.
But I would love the challenge to see them have to set up, okay, you've got two models, you've got to do, I don't know, just for the sake of it, a boudoir shot or an emotive portrait or something. Yeah, something where the actual shot has got to be shot.
Right.
You know what I mean? The actual end product rather than do some fancy editing afterwards.
Right.
I want to see you shoot the photograph. And that's why I love my 5-minute photo challenges is when I'll walk up to someone in the street and introduce myself, talk to them, shoot them, say goodbye to them or stuff within just a space of a couple of minutes.
That's kind of what I liked about, you know, spending the $1,000 to go and do the Joe McNally Through the Lens workshop a couple of years ago, because he did exactly that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, admittedly, he had, you know, he'd brought a couple of models along, and we were at a place called Vaucluse House here in Sydney, which is a gorgeous old, you know, 1800s sandstone place, and it's, you know, beautiful manicured gardens and whatever. But seeing Joe just work a room and, you know, he'd put his model in place and he'd work out, okay, this is what I want to achieve. And he'd go, we've got too much light coming in through those bay windows. So he'd get his, his crew to run outside and just throw up a couple of, white bed sheets over the windows just to subdue the light coming through. And then he'd, you know, he'd then meter with that in mind and work out what lighting he had to supplement. And he basically produced a shot straight out of the camera, you know, which was tethered to a laptop, which was displaying on a big projection screen. You know, and it was the kind of shot that you'd think, yes, I could imagine just opening up an issue of National Geographic and seeing that image exactly the way it is. You know, and he's just produced it straight out of the camera in, you know, maybe 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah. So I mean, that's what Joe's good at, though, is lighting.
Totally.
You know,
totally.
He'd be the first to say, he doesn't build images in Photoshop.
No.
You know, he enhances what he's already, but he doesn't add light in Photoshop. He doesn't add layering other elements that weren't in the scene to start with.
No.
Yeah, too often. He'll actually shoot it in light. And to me, that's...
He's the master of getting it right in camera.
Yeah, it's a lot more... it's a lot more enjoyable. I mean, I said, yeah, even just something as simple as shooting my Mist 6.5 tonight, you know.
Sure.
It's the nuances of just turning that nose a centimetre that makes it fun for me.
Right. Yeah.
You know, feeling that she has to turn a centimeter, feeling that the chin is now in exactly the right spot when she's raising or lowering, you know, that nuance can't be done in Photoshop. That nuance can't, yeah. And once again, depending on how you shoot and how you like your images to look, but to get the way I like an image to look, it has to be that precise.
Yep.
It has to be within, and that's why I can never do this fashion shooting in a studio where the model's just flinging around everywhere and you're a tiger, and they're shooting like crazy because I'm a control freak. I want that bit of light to hit you just there and not there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I've been redoing all, so as I've said a few times over the last few episodes, I'm redoing all my PowerPoints.
Right.
And I've just started doing my natural light one this week. And, we always do the thing, photography, photography, you're too right with light sort of thing. But photos. Mm. Yeah, we take photos, but we take photos. We take light.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that precise. Now, we don't take photos. We take photos.
Yeah.
Yeah. We take the light off the subject, and that's what makes our photos work, you know. And it's such a powerful that nuance of how you saw with your shipwreck.
Mm.
Without that little hint of light that you added with your flash,
yeah,
shot's just not there. You
no,
know?
No.
And you literally photographed that. You painted with light. You wrote with light.
Yeah.
On that ship.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the most photographed shot you've ever taken. Yeah, one of the most photographed photos you've ever taken, because you literally photographed it. You wrote with light.
Yeah,
you lit that subject to make it work.
Yeah,
yeah, and that's why I think with the joy in shooting with flash or studio lighting or continuous anything where you've got control over the lights coming from.
I would expand on that and say that one of the things I find most interesting is combining flash with daylight.
Oh, yeah.
That is a great challenge to me.
Yeah.
And some days I win and some days I fail.
I can't say it is for me. It's never a challenge.
Right.
But that's...
Yeah, but you shoot a lot more than I do.
That's from sheer volume.
Yeah.
You do something often enough, you get reasonably good at it.
Yeah.
But let's say again, when posing my daughter in the 2-minute shoot we did tonight, you can work that fine nuance and feel because it's intuitive because you've done it so often. You can change gears in a car easily if you've done it often enough. But when you're starting out, it's quite hard to do.
That's
it's all the same. It's always the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, the quote I always use is, what's impossible becomes hard. What's hard becomes easy, and what's easy becomes beautiful. That's the process of learning photography.
Yeah, nice.
And once it becomes easy, the technical, then the beauty follows.
Yeah.
But until you get the technical easy,
yep.
the beauty will happen, but nowhere near as often.
Yeah.
Nowhere near as easily. And as you say, some days you win it, some days you lose it.
Yeah.
That battle with ambient versus flash.
Yeah.
That's because it hasn't yet become easy. It's no longer impossible for you.
No.
And I wouldn't say it's hard for you. It's between hard and easy. You're halfway between hard and easy.
That's right.
So it's sometimes a bit, sometimes they don't all fall together for you, so it gets a bit hard. Sometimes it comes together easier, the balance of conditions, and makes it reasonably easy for you.
Yeah.
But the more you deal with the hard, yeah, those
the less hard it becomes.
The failures are what you should be working for. You should be going out trying to fail. Because it's only by solving that. It's only the days that are hard for you now. If you go out every time now and only shooting those easy days when it's easy, you're not going to learn very much.
No, that's right.
You won't grow. But if you go out and shoot when you're just battling with it, if you can overcome the battle and solve it, then you're one more step towards easy.
Yeah.
Easy across the whole thing. So yeah. I do love that whole philosophy, that whole quote philosophy of learning photography. I think it gives you hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a step by step process, and you just keep on going. But anyway, I came across another funny thing tonight on this woman whose 12-year-old daughter has been bugging her for an Instagram account and bugging her for a Facebook account so she can show off all her photos of her friends and stuff. And this woman, this mum's, no.
Yeah.
Do you know how many people can see your photo? Do you know how many people can see your photo? And you know, it's not just between you and your friends and all this sort of stuff. So finally she said, right, she took a photo of her daughter with a sign. I can't remember what the sign says. There's a link. It'll be in the thing. But she basically said, if you can see this photograph.
It said, Mum is trying to show me how many people can see a picture once it's on the internet.
Yeah. And if you look at the Facebook, then so far there's 8,927 shares
right.
of this image.
Yeah. You know?
So Mum's got a point. Yeah. And you could exponentially grow how many people, if they've shared it, how many people actually seen it, haven't done anything. So you'd at least tenfold that. So she's up to 90,000 people have seen that photo of her.
That's right.
Yeah, or more. It's quite amazing that just the connections you can have from stuff like that, you know. So
Have you seen some of the repostings of the image, though?
No. Oh. Have they changed the sign?
Yes. Yeah, so what happened was there's an internet group called 4chan.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with 4chan, no. But basically that's sort of the dark, seedy corner of the web. And the guys on 4chan got hold of it and then started putting new messages on the sign that the girl's holding up. And one of them was like a message to the mum saying, you know, maybe you shouldn't be using your daughter as a, you know, scapegoat for blah, blah, blah. I can't remember the exact wording of the one. But yeah, it was quite interesting that, you know.
But is that not? If I was the mother, I would be so glad that these people had done that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it proves the point perfectly to the daughter.
Yes.
Look what all these people are doing with your image.
Yeah.
They're making you on the sign that you're saying these things that you've never said. All this sort of stuff, having a laugh at you or whatever.
Yep.
All out of your control.
Yeah.
If all people have just done a share and go, yeah, look at this, yeah, okay, it's a little bit of impact. But if all of a sudden these photos of her holding the sign saying all sorts of weird stuff's going around, that's got a lot more impact on the kid, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool.
Yep.
And then this afternoon I came across another video, this guy's only just been starting. He's only got like 5 videos on his website, so I'm sorry, he's just starting out.
Right.
But his website's called The Roaming Focus.
Okay.
He's a Canadian photographer.
Right.
And the episode that sort of, you know, that caught my eye was the fact that this guy canoes down this river in Canada to an abandoned prison that was apparently in the middle of nowhere.
Wow.
And gone in and then shot and everything else. So that inspired me. I want to have a look at that. So first up, it was pretty cool. I like canoodling, yeah.
Mm.
So that's kind of cool, all this adventure stuff. Mind you, when he got to the prison, there was an awful lot of graffiti on it, which I'm assuming not a lot of people in graffiti artists are going to canoe down a river for a day to get someone just to do graffiti. So I think there might be a road nearby just trying to make it look hard. but he's gone in and he's doing all sorts of stuff. He's doing photos and HDR, he's doing light painting, he's doing all sorts. And so it's kind of cool. And he's got a whole range of other ones. Plus you get to hear him say the word aboot a lot, you know? Yeah, there's a lot of moose here aboot, yeah, and that kind of stuff. That's worth his weight.
Bit of Scottish influence, is there?
Aboot. I can't do me those accents very well. But one of the coolest things that I saw that I just loved was whilst he was is in the prison, it's got to night time, he also got to do some light painting, which is great. But he lights up this little stove he's got with him with lots of kindling and stuff.
Right.
And he uses the stove. As it heats, it generates power and charges his GoPro video camera.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so nice. It can charge your iPhone. It can this little heating device charges your electric devices. I thought, well, if there's people out there who do a lot of camping and stuff,
yeah,
this could be a great little tool for them. So the links in there for people to go look at. And the thing's only like about $123 or something, so it's not you know, overly expensive.
Yeah.
It weighs like 2 pounds/1 kilo, so there's something to carry around. Is not such a bad thing. But I thought that, you know, if you're an out and about sort of person and want to keep your phones and your devices charged, the Bio Stove,
I think it's called.
Apparently, it also uses 50% less wood.
Bio Light Stove.
There's different sizes of them, I think. So the light, okay. Smaller one. But I've seen photos on the website there of them in Africa, in villages with the bigger versions of these stoves, and they're using because it uses less fuel. To burn and to heat things with than a normal stove does.
Yeah, right.
So apparently it uses 50% less wood and puts out less smoke and less all this other sort of stuff.
Wow.
And of course, if you're in an area where there's not a lot of, you know, wood to burn, or, you know, that's going to make life hell of a lot easier for you if you're only burning half as much.
Yeah.
So I think they're not only having this great product, I think they're putting some of it towards pretty darn good use in areas of the world where there's more struggles than we have.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Man, that's great.
The absolute last thing I came across is another ways for better photos. 5 design elements for better photos.
Okay.
But for once, it was really good.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Cool. So the link, I'm not sure if I've sent the link through to you.
Yeah, at photofocus.com.
That's the one, yeah. So the 5 designer, and if you go to the website, there's detail for each of these, but lines.
Mm-hmm.
Contrast,
yep.
Color,
yep.
Space, and tension.
Right. So what's tension?
Tension is you know, if you see someone, let's say you do a portrait of someone, he's looking out of the frame at something that you can't see in the frame.
Right.
Because he's looking out of the frame, and there's a tension, an emotive tension between him and the subject out of frame that you can feel and see. There's a tension in the image, even though it's not anything that's visibly noticeable. Right. Yeah, there's a timing where that sort of stuff. Where if he was placed in a different part of the frame, that tension would be either minimized or maximized.
Right.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So to me, that was one of the best. Descriptions, once again, because it's for design elements. These guys are thinking along the lines more of graphic designers than photographers.
Right.
And graphic design can teach us an awful lot about photography, about color contrast, color placement, element placements, and all that kind of stuff. You look at repeating elements and all this sort of stuff that graphic designers do to make a thing interesting is something we can learn an awful lot as photographers. So I thought, well, this sure as hell beats the rule of thirds and all the other sort of mathematical formulas as far as mathematical formulas for how art should work. But these things, true, the color and color bounds and color contrasts and space for the image to breathe in or lack thereof, you know, attention, all these sort of things, where are your lines coming from, where they're drawing you to, all that sort of stuff, to me makes very powerful photographs. And so I thought that was a great, concise guide for people shooting. Where are your contrasting elements? Where are your shapes? There's no shapes in there, but I think shapes is another important thing as well. Where are your shapes? Where are your lines coming and going to? What is there any tension? Can you incorporate tension by changing your composition? All that sort of stuff that makes photos stronger.
Mm. I would say that shapes comes under the lines.
Yeah, I guess they can.
Yeah.
But I think when people think of lines, they don't always think of shapes. So I think sometimes you need to actually spell it out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Lines is just a little bit too my horizon.
Precise.
Whereas, once again, if you can incorporate colors, colored shapes that have great contrast against it, you see all these elements build together, and you get the space to live in, and all your lines are working together. Yeah, you can build all the multiple variations of all these elements into one shot, and the more elements you can include, or sometimes the ones you can exclude make your shots work or don't work. Far better than if you break your viewfinder up into horizontal and vertical thirds, and put it on the vertical or horizontal third dot.
Yeah.
That does work, but my God, it's boring. it's just two, yes, one third sky, two thirds land, two thirds sky, one third land.
Yep.
Repeat ad infinitum for the rest of my life. Put the tree on the vertical third, the horizon on the horizontal third. it's pretty formulaic photography when you think of it that way, you know. But if you come up and shoot that same scene, the tree on the horizon, well, where are my colors? Where is the space? Where do I put it inside this rectangular frame that the space guides me or pulls me away from it? Can I add any tension by where I place it? Yeah, where are my lines and what contrast can I work with? Yeah, there's a different way of thinking about it, you know, a different way of seeing other elements in that same very simple composition.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it means you compose it, or at least makes you look at scenes and evaluate more than just horizontal, vertical line.
Yeah.
You know, just gives you more to work with. And I think the more you can think about let me put it this way. The more you can think about it and then forget about it, the better off it is. And what I mean by that is I don't know why I compose photos the way I do until someone asks me why.
Right.
And when they ask me, I then start start noticing things.
Yeah.
Because of this element and that. But I do that instinctively because I no longer think about it.
Yeah.
Once again, go back to the analogy of changing gears in a car. You really concentrate on it when you're starting to learn. Once you can do it, you start to forget about it.
Yeah.
But if you get into a new car that you've never driven before, then you kind of concentrate a little bit more because the procedure is slightly different. Yeah. The pressures are slightly different, you know. So I think as photographers, that's what we want to learn and then forget and then just use our feel and our intuition. And then only when we have to sort of dissect it later does it come to us the elements that we've used. You know? Yeah. And I think it's a good thing to do that. I think it's important to go and break down why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
And once again, if you go and look at your last 10 photographs and you find you're doing the same thing all the time, that's a problem.
Yeah.
The last 10 favorite photographs all have the same type of tension, the same colors, the same. Because it worked last time, I'll do it again. It worked last time. Yeah, you'll find yourself getting into a rut, and creatively, you want to at least be able. Yeah, yes, that works, but what else can I do?
Yeah,
yeah, and it's only it'll stop you just shooting the same image over and over again, but in different locations.
Yeah.
So I thought that was good design. I would highly recommend people go out and study graphic design.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's don't get yes, go and get books on don't go buy books on how to take photos, go buy books of photos,
right?
Just study great photographs and find what you like about them. Don't let someone tell you how to take the photo. Just look at the photo and find what you like. But the same thing, look at books on graphic design, and look at how where have they placed elements, how have they used colors and all those things, and find the things that speak to you. And try and find ways of incorporating that into your photography as well.
Yeah,
I think it's a cool way, different ways of visualizing and learning. Always, you know.
Yeah, and I think I think you've mentioned this in the past, and I know Shelton did, and that was use your feet.
Oh yeah,
you know, definitely don't settle for just the one point of view when you see something and you think I want to take a photo of it, just because. You've been inspired by where you're standing right at that point in time. Don't settle for that as being the only point of view. You know, move around that subject and see how it can look from different angles.
It's kind of why I hate tripods. they're so restrictive. Once you've got your camera on a tripod, it's set up to a certain height.
Yeah.
It's hard to move down and across a centimeter.
Right.
Or down and across 3 inches. You know, there's subtle small movements which can make all the difference are quite a pain to do.
Yeah.
You know? And the analogy I always like to use is if you imagine driving down an ocean road somewhere in the middle of the height of summer and you see a sign saying scenic lookout and you're driving to the car park and there's one car parking space left and you pull into that spot, would you jump out of your car, you know, as I open the door, stand out of the car, start shooting from where you're standing, get back in the car and drive off? Or would you get out, walk up and down the car park and find, well, where's the best place to shoot from?
Yeah.
Yeah, just because you happen to be standing there doesn't necessarily, it might be right, but doesn't mean it is.
No.
And but if you move that, if you move around that arc, you may find more than one great image.
Yeah.
As well. Yeah, there might be multiple great images in that same location that you wouldn't have seen if you just shot from where you were. And you see it all the time. Someone will set someone up, say if you're doing a portrait, oh, just stand there and you give them a bit of fluff and do their hair. Then they walk back 10 feet and just start shooting. But the who's to say that that arc, the angle that they walk back on is the right one?
Yeah.
Or where they stopped happened to be the right one. Or, you know, this, yeah. It's just trying to force yourself to do more than. But what is it? People will go and do that, and then they'll shoot 50 photos of that same shot.
Yeah.
They'll shoot 10, then find another shot space to shoot 10 from, then find another spot to shoot 10 from. Yeah, do your 50 shots if you have to, but do them from 5 different places.
Yeah.
3 different places or whatever. And, your vision will. Or different heights, different perspectives. Get down low, get up high, you know. Anything to break what you're normally doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And doesn't matter how experienced you are, you have to do that because you keep finding, you keep doing the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I always know I shoot from here, then I do one from 90 degrees.
Right.
Yeah. Don't. What's it like from 47.369 degrees? Could be, yeah. Who knows? Yeah. And that's especially true when shooting faces because everyone's face is different.
Yeah.
So at 48 degrees, the nose may look really weird. But at 46 degrees, it may look fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that two degree of arc. And it was a classic shot. One of my favorite models I shoot in the US posted a photo of her up on Facebook or Instagram this week that she'd had done in some New York crew were shooting her. And the photo's beautifully lit. She's got great hair and they've done the makeup fantastic and blah, blah, blah. But she's got her far eye, the eye away from the camera,
yeah,
looks like a goldfish eye, that big bulbing, you know, just sort of bulging over the top of her nose.
Right.
Because she's on just the angle that her profile looks good, except that eye.
Yeah, right.
That eye to me is just horrendous to look at. Yeah. But I mean, but it's the first thing I see, you know? But it has to be the first thing I see because that's what I'm looking at when I'm shooting. I'm trying to avoid doing that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So I see that stuff. I see the mistake straight away. But now, if this photographer had taken a 2-degree arc to the right, that goldfish eye would have disappeared.
Yep.
And the shot would have been wonderful. And everything about it's beautiful except that. But to me, that's a big thing. If you've got this bulging, great big lump of an eye sticking out the edge of a profile and a nose, it looks kind of weird.
Yeah.
You know, and I saw another, and there was another great example of another model I saw this week, just thinking about that, where their lips, so imagine that they're on like a 45 degree to you, the model, you know, and everything about the shot's beautiful, except their lips have sort of merged with their cheek on the far side. So right. The far side, and so what's happened is distorted the shape of the face. Face the shape of the lips. So the near side to camera, the lips look really quite good, but the far side, because they're sort of blurring in with the cheek line, just look odd.
Was that because of the color of lipstick?
No, it's just the shape bumping into another shape.
You're
creating a T shape by having this line meeting this line. Mm-hmm. It just creates an ugly look. And but once again. In this case, 2 degrees arc to the left would have fixed it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why we have to move. But, you know, I find it hard. I know I don't, when I'm on a tripod, move those 2 degrees.
I think it's awesome that you see that level of detail, and I think that's something that only comes with having shot faces as often as you have.
Yeah, I know. But you know what? Yes and no. It's being introduced to early enough that you start to see it. I don't think it's a matter of how long you've been shooting it. You just never necessarily thought about it before. Because I guarantee you from now on, if I showed you those pictures,
yeah,
the next time you're shooting, you would see it.
Right.
Because you're now aware of it.
Yeah.
But when you're at the level of shooting most people are at, they're more concerned about the expression or the smile or where the light's hitting or the composition, not the nuances that actually make the photograph work.
Right.
Yes, those big elements, those big things are important.
Yep.
But it's the nuance of expression, the nuance of pose that elevates it beyond, or makes it the photo they're really striving for, the vision they see in their head, but don't know how to make it happen. But as soon as you see that bulging eye over a nose in a photo and someone's pointed it out to you,
yep,
you'll start seeing it.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
that makes sense.
It's like anything in life. You know, it's like if you're going out to buy a new car, right?
Yeah.
And you haven't made up your mind, but you start, oh, you've got all hot and heavy. You decided, I really want that car. It's brand new. I love it. I think it's great. All of a sudden, as you're driving along, you start seeing it everywhere.
That's right.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
When you start to see these faults and understand, okay, why it's a problem, and we're not talking about aesthetic. Oh, you know, I think you should really have that as a 2.97 degree turn to the left, and that would make that photo better. No, it's just ugly. Yeah, it's just not flattering to the person you're shooting. So it's not a rule. It's not a guideline. It's not anything artistic. It's just a simple fact.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like that's just Glenn's opinion. If you saw, you too, and were made aware of it, and you weren't emotionally attached to the subject you're looking at, you would go, oh, yeah, I see what you mean. But if it was your son, you'd be so attached to the it's a great photo of my son, that you wouldn't mind that bulging eye.
Yeah, right.
But if it was someone who weren't attached to, you would.
Right.
So it's, think of the new car principle. As soon as you start seeing these things for the first time, you start seeing them everywhere.
Yeah.
You start seeing that car, if you start seeing this problem, and therefore you don't shoot them anymore.
Yeah.
And it's only by talking about it, talking composition, like we've just done today. This is totally unplanned, but I think that discussion elevates us all. We all think more about it, And next time, I think it's one of the best ways to learn, which is why hanging around with other photographers who all have different opinions is a great thing to do, because just that 5-minute conversation can give you years worth of experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't. Yes, it might take you. Yeah, the way I learned has been from way back in the early days of film. Not early days of film. It's gone back a bit too far. My early days were in film. Yeah, it was a very different experience to learning photography as it is now.
But now we
can see that stuff so much quicker, and we can ramp up our knowledge that much quicker that you don't need 30-odd years of shooting to know to fix that.
Yeah,
you just got to have a conversation with someone.
Yeah.
You know, I was watching David Duchemin's videos again this week. Now I'm still trying to get all through 13 hours.
Yeah.
One of the things he was talking about business, he said, and marketing. And he said, almost all of his great projects and his great business opportunities have come through conversations. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he says, the way to get more business and more good business opportunity is simply to have more conversations.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I think the same thing goes to learning photography. You know, if you can learn something from having a great conversation about photography, well, try and have more of them.
Yes, definitely.
The more conversations you have, and the more you can sort of hone your visual thought process. And take other people's viewpoints and take from it you take everyone with a grain of salt, and you don't know one person's speaking gospel here. It's just opinions.
Mm.
But you take from all those things the things that resonate with you, and you build on that. And I heard another thing about style this week. Someone was saying, David Duchemin, people said, oh, I love your style. And he goes, well, I have a style. You know, to him, he doesn't. He's always looking forward to the next shoot and the next opportunities, so he's not putting any thought process into how he's going to shoot those things. He's just going to shoot and feel and what's right at the time. But everyone who looks at him and thinks about their style, they're looking at his past work and putting it together and building an opinion around
how
they feel about the images, how they see the image, how emotionally connected they are with the images.
Yeah.
So they're connecting, but to him, it's not. That's just a byproduct of what he's shooting.
Right.
Is it a style or is it not? No, it's not necessarily a style. It's just that. Well, I see this way, and as the thing, as the float, the wash behind me, like the boat going down a river, the wash behind me is gone. The byproduct of me going forward. Yeah, and so is my photos. The photos I'm taking, the body of work, the style that you're seeing is just the wash of my boat going down a river. Yep. He didn't say that. That's just sort of my visual interpretation of it. And that's a good thing. Always be looking forward, you know. I was being interviewed months ago for a magazine in the UK, and they said, all these same stupid questions. You know, what's your favourite photograph you've ever taken? And so was the next one. You know, the next one's going to be my best photo ever is going to be the next one, because we want to look forward.
Yeah,
we don't want to look back at a photograph we took 10 years and go, oh yes, isn't that great? 10 years ago. I want my next photo to be awesome. I don't really care that much about my last ones.
Right.
You know? I mean, I do. You know, you do. You like them and stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't want to hang my hat and say that's what I've done.
No.
There's my body of work.
Yeah.
Do that when I'm dead. Yeah. You know? But right now, what am I going to like? This I'm looking on the screen at the moment. This photo to my daughter tonight, and pull up my Facebook page, and we'll talk about the same thing tomorrow. And I look at this, and it's like to me, there's a power in this shot. And it's a strengthened expression, and it's just, yeah. Of course, I'm emotionally connected with the subject, but that was my most recent image.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to the next one I shoot to be that or better.
Are you saying the CPW Facebook page?
No, on my personal.
Oh, okay.
And I'm always wanting the next photo to be the best, the next photo to be great, the next one to fix all the nuances of things I don't necessarily like about that. You know. We want to be pushing.
Yeah.
And if you're not constantly wanting to push, then, you know, why are you doing it?
Wow. That's a great image.
Thanks, Tony. Yeah, but it's like, you know, it's like when you're playing golf, the object of golf is not to go out, if you're really into golf, is not to go have a nice walk around 18 holes, it's to go around as least amount of shots as possible.
Yeah.
And then next time do it even less, and the next time do it less, and so on, you know. You're always challenging yourself to be better. And that's what we should be. And it's not necessarily competitive, because we're competing against ourselves, but we want to be pushing ourselves to hone our skill so we get round in par or subpar.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't want subpar photos. Some analogies just don't work, Bruce, have you noticed that? But yeah, so that's a quick 2-minute portrait by a window this afternoon.
You know? I like both of those. They're both.
Yeah, they're very different. Yeah. Bit of quick costume change halfway through. But it was a 2 or 3 minute shoot because I was just feeling, oh, I want to take a photo. Kid, you're up. but emotively, they're very, very different.
Yeah,
those two images. That's partly because the expressions she's got on her face on both of those are ones that she brought to it.
Right.
So I'm not saying give me moody, give me but she'll put an intensity on when she's looking directly in the camera, which is different than when she's looking away from the camera. That's tension. Yeah. See, the tension in the image when she's looking directly at you is a very different feel.
Yeah.
It's a very, very different emotional feel than the one where she's gently looking away.
Yeah.
Same kid, same light.
Yeah.
But different tension in the image. And there's lines in both images. And there's contrasts in both images. You know, you see all these elements that come together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
the first one is very Rembrandt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Feeling of the way the light falls on a face.
And I think the color palette.
Yes. Yes.
The goldy, reddy, the crucifixes on the jacket.
On the fabric.
On the fabric. Yeah. But there is, yeah, there's elements there that are, that add to the emotive feel we look at when we look at an image, you know?
Yeah.
Where the CPU or more black and white palette of image. We don't have that color distraction. We don't have there's no color there giving us a emotive feel.
No.
Yeah, the gold and red in the other image are warm and lush and, we start associating stuff with it. The black and white one doesn't, you know?
Yeah, but to me, the black and white one, because she's looking straight down the barrel of the camera, you just connect to the eyes.
Absolutely, yeah. And because it's also, but imagine though, if she was wearing a bright red top and this was in color, you'd be distracted by the color. It would become about her and the rest of her.
Yeah.
But because there's no color in the image, it's just about her face.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your eyes are drawn because there's no color distraction. And I do this in my portrait workshop. I show an image I shot in India of this woman with this bright red and blue sari on.
Yeah.
And I show the photo in color and the photo in black and white and ask, you know, where do you look in both images? And in the color one, everyone looks at everything because the color is so distracting. It pulls you away from the face.
Right.
But in the black and white one, you only look at her eyes.
Yeah.
And the black and white ones are more about her.
Yeah.
The color one's more about her culture.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And then I pull up an image of another girl wearing a sari, but this time she's got warm skin tones and her sari is gold and browns. And so very, very complementary colors to her skin tone.
Yeah,
and everyone goes back to her eyes because the color is no longer a pull that doesn't draw your eye to it because they're complementary colors, they're balanced and they're similar tones, Yeah, so your focus of your eye goes to different spots. There's an interesting portrait of these three images coming up. And, yeah, I love this stuff. Yeah, I could talk about this stuff for hours. You know? bore people silly, probably. But, yeah, you can tell my voice probably gets a little bit more passionate when I talk about this sort of stuff.
Because
this is, to me, where, this is where my headspace is at as far as photography, is these nuances of emotiveness and feel and tone and tension. And, yeah, I think that's a very interesting place to be thinking about your photography, rather than one third, two thirds, or where do I put my horizon, or that's not interesting.
I've also noticed you become less flippant when you get onto this.
Yes. What? Flippant? But it's true. Well, that's because this stuff. I love all sorts of photography, but I'm passionate about this. Shooting people. And once again, these are two photos of my kid. So more than anything, shooting people is really important, but shooting my family is more important than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you do. Oh, I love that. This is the discussions, this is the conversations I love to have with people.
Yeah.
And I love to have with people who are, and unfortunately, there's not as many people. How do you say that? It's coming across like a tosser. There's not as many people in the same headspace that I am at. That I associate with,
right?
Who we can have this knowing discussion that they already know it,
right?
So you both look at it and you both see the same. Yeah, it's like when you meet the right woman in your life. It just feels different than if you're going out with just a girl you're normally going out with. When you talk to another photographer who sees the world or feels the world the way you do, there's that simpatico of connection of visualization, and it's very different.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's enough of me rambling on. We've talked our hour, dude.
And,
I could rabbit on for another three.
Excellent. All right. Well, have a good week.
I will, my friend. I will. And to everyone out there, bon voyage.
All right. Talk to you next week.
Hurdles.
Shutters Inc., another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.